Hello and welcome to the 16th episode of the Decade Old podcast covering the second quarter of 2009. I'm Gloria Shannon, I'm today's host, and with me I have...
Hi, I'm Connor. How's it going?
Hi, I'm Karen. How are you?
Sack me as host. I made the BBC.
That was Richard, for anyone who wasn't aware. This podcast, we're going to be discussing the film Up, Heyerdahl, Richard's pick, Crank 2, and Star Trek.
Why did you already mention my pick? Well, you mentioned nobody else's.
Well, yours was weird. His
Crank wasn't.
Connor's was just bizarre on every level. Crank 2 was just weird. But yours was just... You picked Blindsided and you still picked a fucking weird one. So first off, we're going to be talking about Up, which was my pick. And it was my pick because it's just so cute. It's basically about this old man called Carl. And it's kind of about him and his deceased wife at the same time of being about him taking a new adventure with this kind of kooky, bit dumb boy called Russell. And Carl basically and his wife Ellie, they saved up their whole lives to try and go on this trip to bring their house to Paradise Falls, which is like this ultimate destination that they both wanted to go to because they were both fans of an explorer who ended up deserted near there. But life got in the way and basically they couldn't actually go on the trip. And when Carl actually saved up enough money for them to go, Ellie sadly got sick and died, which was just heartbreaking, and I bawled my eyes out. But Carl decides that he's going to fulfill his promise to Ellie, and he's going to get his house to the cliff edge of Paradise Falls. So he has a bunch of... He's a balloon salesman, I think, or used to be, and he attaches a load of balloons to the house and basically hatches a plan to fly the house to Paradise Falls. But unknowingly, Russell, who is like a Boy Scout member or something like this, is trying to get his badge for looking after old people. So he accidentally ends up flying away with Carl in the house. And they meet a dog who can talk, and they meet an ostrich type looking thing called Kevin. And just chaos ensues. And Carl also gets to meet his longtime, you know, hero, Charles, but it's not exactly what he thought it was, and that's kind of the plot of it anyway.
Why didn't he just adopt a kid?
You can't just adopt a kid that has a family.
No, but like, surely there's kids.
No, I think she means the way that they couldn't have kids. Ellie and Carl couldn't have kids.
Yeah, so why didn't he just adopt a kid?
Maybe it might have been more difficult back then, like in the 1930s. 1920s, 30s, that's kind of when they seemed to be young, like when they were kind of youngish. Like, it was probably...
I don't think there's such a thing as why don't we just adopt a kid. I think it in and of itself has its own challenges and stuff.
Oh yeah, I know, but I mean, like, I think it would have probably been a lot harder to adopt back then. You'd probably had to have a lot of money to adopt in the 40s or 50s.
In the Always Sunny version of the Up intro, they just literally go to the baby store and buy loads of babies. So why do they do that?
Because it's not Always Sunny.
The Always Sunny intro up for parody is better than the original, I think.
I thought the first 10 minutes were fantastic. I think they're so good. It could almost stand alone as its own short film.
Yeah.
There's people watch it as its own little short film.
It's so good.
I can't. It makes me cry.
It makes me cry. It's such a powerful sequence of images.
Cousin's a teacher in the States, and like they're trying to pick a movie to watch, and she's like, I'm going to show the kids Up, and another teacher turned around like, have you seen Up? She's like, no. Be prepared, the first couple of minutes are very hard. Maybe pick a different film for the little kids.
Yeah, but do the little kids, I think that part is nearly harder for adults, because do kids understand the gravity of the first few minutes of like their life together? And you know, like, do they really, because kids don't really react to death the same way we do.
Well, they understand the imagery of her crying in the doctor's room,
yeah,
coming directly after them seeing babies in the clouds. I don't, maybe not.
Yeah, do, like, I'm just wondering, do they understand
the
gravity?
But I think more of the other teacher was saying it because my cousin will be watching it with them, And if she starts bawling her eyes out in front of the class,
I would. Like, I wouldn't be able to control it. Like, it's just... It really is, just for a cartoon, it's so heartbreaking, but also heartwarming at the end.
But normally, like, films are sad at the end, but that one was such reverse, as it smacked you right
back. Yeah, you were like, oh, they're going to go, flying on this adventure together, because you obviously know the title image, and then, bang, baby dead, bang, she's dead, and you're just like, what the fuck?
But this is the thing, I think the first 10 minutes are so good that they're almost too good.
It's hard to live up to it.
It hits you with such an emotional punch right out the gate that I think it actually kind of hurts the conflict later on in the film.
I think when they
have their court mandated falling out at the end of Act 2, like what happens in every Disney / Pixar film, it doesn't really, I don't think it has as much of an effect as it would have had, because you've already been through such an emotional...
I know, but so since his wife died, like you could see that he used to be actually a really lovely man. But since his wife died, he's like that stereotypical neighbour, like, don't throw the ball in the yard, or he's going to, like, not give it back to you, or I'm going to, like, chase
burst
you
it.
Off. Or burst it. And then Russell kind of starts to break those boundaries and he starts to let him in. So then when they have the fight, you kind of like, oh, he was starting to be kind of what he was with Ellie somewhat again. And it's like, oh shit, he's going to... Obviously, you know, as an adult sitting there watching it, he's going to make up with Russell in the end. But, you know, as a kid, maybe you don't.
I love the beginning. I wouldn't have lost it. I just think it was kind of it was almost kind of like a choice between the two. I still think the film is better off with it than without it. But it just kind of reminds me of in the director's cut of The Exorcist, when she does the spider walk down the stairs. William Friedkin took that out just because he thought it was too much too soon. It was something too shocking before the plot.
Yeah.
I just feel that there's a similar effect with this.
Okay, I have a trivia question for you guys. How many balloons do you think were lifting his house?
Six.
Six.
Seven.
Okay.
1,500.
2,500.
10,297 balloons lifting his house.
Wait, so there were 10,000 different animated balloons?
That's a lot. Like, I watching that, I was like, the rendering must
according
have been
according to IBDM trivia, yes. So that's, and they also had live ostriches brought into the studio to like base the Kevin character on.
I love all the dog jokes in the whole thing, like squirrel.
Ah, the dog is so cute,
I
and it's so cute
jokes.
That it can talk. And the guy Charles is creepy. He's just creepy.
Actually, how old is he meant to be? Because like Carl is like implied to be at least 70s at his youngest.
Carl is like 78.
So then your man must be like 100.
He should have been a good 30 years older than
me. Yeah, because like he was at least 30, like an adult when he was a child, like. So he has to be 100. And yet somehow like Carol's more kind of, you know.
Yeah, Carol looks older.
Like Carol has the Zimmer frame and a more scrunched up face and hunched over and all this, like.
I don't know, maybe being deserted on like the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
like,
you kind of just have to.
Dogs.
Get like
good health.
With it.
I suppose, like they say, like company keeps you young, I guess. Also, he was voiced by Ed Ansler, who was like being 95 his whole life.
No, that
I love
was the main character.
Yeah, that's what I'm on about.
I
Carol.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, sorry. Yeah,
I just love him. For
God, yeah, he's in his hundreds now, isn't he?
At least, and he's still doing shit. Like he's great.
The bit I love at the end is when he finds the book and she's like filled. All their like little things they did together and their wedding,
like,
and stuff, and that's their adventure.
He never would have had to have gone if he just finished reading the book.
Yeah, but then he wouldn't have found, like, he wouldn't have ever accepted Russell then as like a little psychic friend. So, and that was his adventure.
That's the message of the film, right? Life is its own adventure.
Yeah, well, that's what I think it is, anyway.
And just kind of finding friends in unlikely places, because like an old man with such an innocent kid. Like, Russell's far more innocent and not beaten bubbly, considering, like, he's from kind of, like, a broken home and everyone's kind of, like, sick of him at the club and all this, like. Like, he's very optimistic and upbeat, considering like how excluded
he is. I don't think he was from a broken home. I think his father just left, which happens.
Well, like, yeah, I suppose so. That, but it's a neglectful little home.
Does that constitute a broken home?
Well, his father's busy and his mother's implied to be dead or left or something, like, because he said that Esther or whatever her name is, this is my mem, like.
Yeah, well, he still has one loving parent, and it's just that their parents are separated.
Yeah, but in films, like, it's, if a parent really is a working home, you know, that's seen as like child abuse.
I wouldn't say if they're working, but if they're working so much, like, I don't remember, was there a big deal about the child going missing?
Not really, not no. Really, like, that's no. It. Like, nobody just noticed. You know, like, I mean, he said he'd show up to
that's
the pinting.
The difference.
And he never
you
did.
Know, my mother worked when I was little, my dad worked when I was little, and they work now. But if I'd gone missing for more than a couple of hours, there would have been something, you know, to be said about that. But it's like, you know, even when they're back, like, or whatever, it's like, oh.
He didn't even show up to his thing, though.
It's just, yeah. It's
wait,
just,
was that his mum at the end of the thing, actually?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I only remember that
but
now.
But, like, there was
she's not dead.
There was just nothing said about, like, him going missing. So that would be child neglect if you didn't notice that your child was missing for more than, a few, like, 24 hours. So, anything else? Oh, the budget was $175 million, but it made $735.1 million in the box office. So it made like $600 million.
Well,
I say
probably
less.
More about 400 or 500, because they never give away proper budgets.
Honestly, I thought it would have made more because it was a very big deal. Like, and please don't make a fucking sequel to it, please.
Well,
Pixar,
it,
stop with the
it
sequels.
It made the most out of all the films we watched.
All the Pixar films. Oh, sorry.
No,
oh,
no.
The,
out of
today,
the four,
sorry,
that
yeah.
We watched today. No, I think Toy Story or something is the most profitable Pixar movie.
Probably Toy Story.
Cars, I think, is actually the most profitable.
Or something.
It doesn't really have a profitable thing on the poster, does it?
Well, like, it's how plushes of the dog.
I mean, you can't. It's hard to sell a movie just with an old man's face.
Actually, yeah, that's impressive. It did so
plus,
well.
Plus, Toy Story and Cars and things like that have more opportunities
yeah,
for
merchandise. Yeah.
Like, I'd say that's not. I know that's not box office, but like, imagine trying to sell like old dolls of. You would get away with Doug and maybe even Russell, but like the two outfits.
That's why I'm so scared now. If they ever do inevitably make a sequel to this, they're going to add some Minion-esque character just because they can sell plushies and shit.
It's a lot harder to market a film just with the abstract image of a house being lifted up by balloons than with, you know, Woody or
I do remember everyone talking about it when it came out, though. I remember it being a massive deal. And I think, like you said, it was the first 10 minutes was just caught everyone's heart. Like, you couldn't watch it. I don't care who you are. If you had a heart of stone, that had to do something to you. That first opening, like, 10 minutes.
Did you ever see Hannibal Buress' stand-up bit about Up? He's like, it's a good film, but it didn't make me cry. I'm an adult. I know real people that died, not cartoons.
Oh, yeah, but if that is the reality for so many people, like, it was too realistic. Like, when, you know, things happen to the toys, it's in Toy Story upsets you, but at the same time you're like, how realistic is it that my toys are like upset that they're now at different houses or in the attic, whereas that's real life.
Was it a stillbirth?
That's real life.
Was it a stillbirth or was she just
it was a miscarriage, I think.
Oh, okay. I always had it in my head.
And then they were told like they couldn't. Well, this is my understanding of it. Then they were kind of told, like, naturally they weren't going to have kids. And it's not like IVF was around back then.
Yeah, I presume
like
she was infertile or something. Like.
Yeah, Martin's
one
kind
of them.
Excuse me, I'm eating a croissant at the moment. Is that they went to, like, a specialist and she was told that she was infertile. That's I never picked up that she had a miscarriage or whatever.
Or maybe she, I don't know, that's what I picked up, because did not look like she was pregnant at some point.
No, I don't think she ever had a bump. Like, I'm just gonna say, all crying in the office.
You don't have to have a bump to have a miscarriage. You can have a miscarriage after a couple of weeks.
The more you know.
Like, some women can get pregnant, but they can't
carry
the baby. Something about whatever way their womb doesn't work properly. I feel like we've got very serious.
I'm
now
learning a lot about miscarriages today.
You learned a lot about childbirth yesterday.
Did I?
We were talking in the garden. We were having a few ciders, and for some reason, we were talking about childbirth. And Richard thought that you could just like squeeze a woman's belly, and the baby would come out.
Like, could not even hit the back. You know, kind of like.
Oh God, help your girlfriend if she ever gets pregnant.
Stop that.
Will we move on to our next movie?
Sure,
I have everything I said.
Okay, our next movie was Air Doll. Yay. And Richard is going to tell us about this.
Like Glo briefly mentioned, this is based off a DVD cover I saw it earlier a decade ago, and I thought it was funny. The premise sounded like gas. But like, it was really kind of slow and pretentious. One of these just kind of like, oh, look at these characters, the daily life things. And I do like slice of life things, but this one just felt really kind of up its own hole. Basically, this owl fella, well, not owl fella, he's just a lad. He shags his sex doll, and like his Mickey makes it come to life or something. It just walks around town kind of like a newborn and gets a job in a DVD shop and meets characters just kind of living their life in the city. And nobody really reacts to the fact that a sex doll just came to life. In fact, he doesn't even find out, or I don't think he just even cares until like near towards the end. Like, and yeah, like the best thing I can say about it, some shots were kind of nice, but I'm just like urban landscape, particularly Japanese urban landscape. And that's all I can say.
This movie was so weird. First of all, like you said, your man who has sex with her, first of all, there's no explanation as to why she came to life. He's been having sex with her for ages.
So, she found a heart.
She found a heart, but how? Like, she didn't find it from his Mickey.
It was very fairy tale-ish. It just happened. Yeah, like.
But no, a fairy tale, there's always an explanation. There's a wish or a spell or a fairy godmother. There was nothing here.
Does it matter? It would just be bullshit either way.
No, it would give a bit more. To me, it would give a bit more explanation. And then you could kind of be like, okay. She literally just, he was shagging her there for fucking years or ages or whatever. And then just one day, she just becomes alive. And then she goes home every evening to this guy and acts like she's still dead, so he can just shag her lifeless body.
So like, first we thought it was kind of Toy Story logic, like, you know, because she only left the house when he was gone to work or whatever, like. But no, it's just she chooses that, but they never say why she chooses to pretend to still be a doll, like, just because.
I liked it more than I disliked it, I'll say that much.
I'll never watch it again.
I don't think it wasn't the worst film we've ever watched.
I'll watch it again.
No, it definitely wasn't the worst film we ever watched. But
it wasn't the worst film you've watched this episode.
No.
I just have so many questions. That's my like thing. Like, who were the side characters? There's a girl who kept eating everything. There was like an older woman who seemed to be struggling with like her bills. There was like a dad and the little girl, and like, they hardly any of them had actually any interaction with her. If they did, it was very minimal, the main character. So I don't understand what they're... And it was all right until the belly button.
Yeah.
I don't know who wants to explain that scene to people.
So essentially, she develops this kind of love interest with the guy, young guy she works with in the video store. And due to a misinterpretation, comment that, like, you know, he says that he's just like her, she also thinks that he's an air doll.
Yeah, he says he's empty inside like her, but she's literally empty inside.
Yeah, but she obviously, he's using it as a metaphor.
So essentially he develops this fetish where he likes to deflate her and blow her up again. So she wants to do the same in return and cuts open his belly button, and he bleeds to death while she tries to blow air back into his mouth.
Mm. And I jokingly said...
Yeah, Connor called it. Like, literally, like, she was kind of cuddling him or whatever in the bed after this whole... He was blowing her up, blowing her back down and all this. And then Connor was like... she went up and got, like, seemed to leave the bedroom. And Connor was like, oh, or Fitzy or whatever you want to call him. Was basically like, oh, imagine if she just like tried to cut him open and then breathe back into him, and then that's exactly what she did. It was so weird. The director of this film, I don't know what his name, but he said that the concept or the whole point of the film was to showcase the loneliness of urban life and the mean and the like trying to figure out the meaning of being human. So you kind of called it last night when you were like saying it's going to be some sort of like intellectual way of showing like loneliness or something.
Well, from the like the blurb I read in the back of the DVD years ago, I thought it was going to be some kind of really weird love story between a man and his love doll, not this kind of weird kind of borderline artsy kind of just walking around town and meeting odd characters, except the side characters weren't odd or endearing enough, so like I didn't give a shit about them. Like,
why is urban life lonelier than country life?
So you know, it's the whole fucking meme of like, oh man, there's so many people in the city and yet nobody knows me.
I think it depends on your circumstances. So like, you, most people, like when I, so I don't live in, like where I grew up isn't the countryside, it's Clare, but County Clare, but like I lived in a housing estate. So, but like lots of people who live in the country know their neighbours really well, and there's like, there's, they build a little community, whereas lots of people say that when they live in a city, they couldn't be arsed getting to know their neighbours, because one day it could be Bob, and the next day it could be Mary, and the next day, like, it changes so much, and people move around so much, and there's so many people, but people are less likely to, like, talk and communicate, and, you know, whereas in the country, someone will knock on the door and be like, can I have a bit of sugar there? I ran out of sugar.
Like, that was very bad.
Not that, anymore, but it would have been.
That was very badly broadcast.
When I was younger, though, that was a thing.
But that whole, like, the urban, you know, you're lost in a sea of people,
like,
thing.
Technically speaking, like, because, like, of hers, back then it would be harder to go to shops a while ago. Now, like, going down to a shop and driving to get some sugar is not a big deal. But when you had to walk or cycle to a shop, you would probably prefer to go knock on your neighbour's door and be like,
okay, well, according to Karen, then that distinction is gone. So,
it's not if anything's a country, I would know the names of all my neighbours.
Which ones?
Well, can you, right, so you live basically in this, in a suburb of the city here, yeah, right, of Dublin.
Do you know who lives in the house next door?
Can you tell us?
So the house on our left is empty, and the house on our right, her
well,
name,
that's easy.
I've only met her 5 million times.
Doxed.
What's her fucking name again?
Whereas Karen can probably tell you the people.
If I
can,
if I remember it, I'll bleep it out.
I know her name. I'm expected to know the neighbours down the road, up
yeah,
the road.
Like, Karen could probably tell you most of the people on her
probably
a mile. You have no neighbours though.
Now, I live in the country with my partner, and I don't really know, like, I kind of know a couple of people on our road, but I don't know that many, but that's a slightly different situation in our case, just because we have dogs and we've got lots of farmers near us and they don't really like dogs. So
I felt like this film, though, did a very bad thing of, like, translating the whole city life is lonely, because we kept bumping into the same reoccurring character, so there's no scenes
like
in Lost in Translation where you're walking down a sea of kind of alienating people. Like,
but maybe that's the metaphor, though, that all these, there are all these characters, but they don't interact with each other.
But there's still, it's still some sort of weird community, though, like, in a way. Like,
yeah, but they're all these people, and they're all in this massive community, but they don't talk to each other at all during the film, right?
Like, I just, it made,
she's the only one who has any interaction with any of them.
It made the city still feel more smaller, though. It didn't make it feel like, you know, she's on a train full of people and there are, might as well be grey blobs, like.
Can anyone answer why she kept going home to your man and lying there and letting him do things to her?
Because she thinks
when
it's her purpose.
It's like she was being raped, but she didn't realise she was being raped. I couldn't find out how much the budget was for this, but it only made 1.13 million.
Is that dollars or yen?
You said US dollars.
Oh good, because if that was 1.1 million yen, that is not good.
Well, it's not for, I know that that sounds like a lot of money, but 1 million for a movie isn't
great, that's a money loser if that's what it's real about.
These films would be cheaper though than
they didn't say what the budget was. For some reason, an interesting fact, her watch always points to 3 o'clock.
Because they couldn't be arsed getting the battery for it.
And then the clock that rings or something in the, I don't remember seeing this, but it also rings at 3 o'clock in the movie.
I'm sure,
so
that means something.
There's something to do with 3 o'clock.
That feels like just something.
But her watch always, the big watch she wears on her wrist always points to 3 o'clock.
That feels like an oversight they left in the film, and they're like, no, it means something, lads. Yeah, it wasn't a mistake.
Probably is just a mistake, and they're like, oh yeah,
like, we'll the spoons
go with this
in the room.
We'll say it means something important. Maybe that's like the time that she, like, woke up and became a person. Because it was definitely a morning.
I think it was early in the morning.
Yeah.
Because do we know how much time passed? Because it seems like she gets a lot done while he's at work. She gets up, she runs around and flushes around the house, trying on different outfits. Then she goes to work. And then she sometimes goes off and has dinner or does this or that or the other. And then she still gets home before he gets home.
Yeah, she went to the beach and all one day. Went to the beach for dinner another day.
Maybe he just works very late. Like, he works in a restaurant. Maybe he works very late hours. So maybe it was actually kind of like closer to afternoon by the time she woke up. And that's the meaning of the clock. The watch. There you go.
Total spoons in the room situation.
I just found it weird. And your man having sex with her, the owner of the video shop.
Yeah, that was horrible.
As a blackmail thing.
Yeah, that was horrible. He thought she was actually human and just a whore.
Oh, like...
That was horrible.
That film was very problematic with the rape thing. Like, he was being a rapist without realizing, not him,
the guy
who owned her or bought her as a doll. And then what I found really strange, I think we said it last night, is no one seemed to who did find out about her seemed that shocked.
Like the
as in the fact that she was a doll. No one seemed.
Which is probably why she talks a lot of people make comments that in fact she's not the only one out there and whatnot. Probably is what also fueled her belief that this must be normal
Yeah. And even she goes back to the factory where she was made and basically starts talking to the guy who made her, in the factory, who painted her lips and gave her eyes and all this kind of stuff. And he's just totally oh, this is a normal Tuesday.
It would add another hour onto the runtime, though. She had to explain to everyone.
She doesn't have to explain to everyone.
Even if they looked
scared. Even if they looked a bit freaked. Like, the only time that someone looked freaked out when finding out about her was for 2 seconds when your man who owned her saw her just standing there. And that was more even if I was in the same house as someone and they were in a different room, I came back and they were just standing there, that would even make me jump. But there was no reactions to people. Like, when she deflated in the shop and her love interest realized she was a doll, even that didn't seem to have any questions. It was just people were just okay. Either they're very accepting society or they're all lunatics. And I don't know which. I'm not saying that you shouldn't accept her because she seemed to be a person with feelings and everything, but would you not have questions?
Nah, they're just all ask questions.
Right, it was just weird. But it wasn't as bad as our next movie, which I think
I think it was an interesting enough concept in a way, but just...
It was too long.
Very long.
It was too long, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, 2 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was very slow paced as well.
Yeah, it was just so slow. And then when you think something's going to happen, everything just has such a non-reaction.
Yeah, I could have just done with something more. Some more substance.
Yeah.
It could have been a bit quirkier, honestly.
And less scenes of her getting dressed and stuff. I don't know. They were kind of long for something that was just, what normal people do every day.
It's not an artsy film if it doesn't drag on.
Mm.
Do you think the film's about finding out that you are alone in the world? Because she's under the delusion that people are, quote unquote, like her, and then she discovers that's not true.
Probably, but yeah. Under a Skin is a kind of similar concept, but that wasn't fucking boring.
So this is why you should never judge a movie, the same as a book, by its cover.
You just saw a pretty Asian girl and was like, I want to watch that movie.
Oh, I thought it'd be funny from the description.
Yeah, if you described the movie, it would sound like...
Yeah, no, when you guys said it was like a Japanese...
Mannequin.
I was like, oh, I love that movie. Okay. And I was getting in the mindset for my bit of comedic,
J-pop first, nothing's going to stop us now.
Just something kind of funny or whatever, but no,
So what was this description that was so funny? Because that's the 50th well, time you've told us.
Again, like, I'm going off memory of a thing I read nearly 10 years ago.
Just, so you don't even know if just the description something like, was funny.
Whatever your man's name is, has a sex doll, and the sex doll comes to life and finds love, and we're like, oh, it sounds gas. Sounds so dumb. Sounds so queer. Sounds gas.
Then she got replaced by your man. Your man bought a newer model.
Yeah, I mean, like, he fucking knew what he wanted.
And bigger boobs.
Like.
Did you notice that? It had bigger boobs.
Sequel.
That, and it's so weird. He always names the dolls after his ex-girlfriend, who he didn't like. She was annoying because she was human and spoke.
That's just, like, that guy has issues. Have we said all we need to say about our doll, or
yeah.
Does anyone have anything
yeah,
to add?
Not much more to add?
Okay,
to
the next one we're going to be here for a few minutes, I think.
Yay.
Connor, take it away.
We'll crank two.
Yeah.
Yes.
Electric Boogaloo.
Oh.
Literally Electric Boogaloo.
Oh my god.
It's a sequel to Crank One, isn't it?
That's literally all you can say, really, isn't it? Because it was so shite. Sorry, actually tell us a bit about the
plot. Or lack thereof.
He wakes up after dying at the end of
the... I can't take this seriously. Continue.
He's had his heart stolen and replaced with... I don't even know. Do these things exist in real life?
Yeah, that's yeah.
I meant to Google
real artificial heart that he has, that they have in the movie.
Oh, that's another bit of trivia.
I didn't include it in the ones I wrote down, but it is an extra bit of trivia.
Well, there you go. Yeah, he has his artificial heart, and somebody's running away with his real heart, and he wants to get it back. But I guess the science of this is kind of wonky. He has to keep powering up his artificial heart. So he keeps finding more and more elaborate ways to power it up. That's it. That's the film. It's contriving ways to...
Unlike the last film where he found ways to like keep his like adrenaline up, now he's to electrocute himself every 20 minutes. And that has no consequences at all.
I loved it when I was 16, just like I loved the first Crank film.
I still
like it. It's obviously not as good as when I saw it when I was 16. But there you go.
I want those however minutes of my life.
It wasn't
back.
That bad.
One hour.
It wasn't worse than
1 hour, 35 minutes and 56 seconds.
I want them back.
Okay, well, think about all the terrible rom-coms you've made me say.
No,
they have some sort of a plot, or they have some sort of like something that makes some sort of sense, some normality. This is a lunatic going around fucking trying to get his heart back when the doctor got it back in about 20 minutes just using a whore. And then he what is in that box? I want to know what was in that box as well. The Asian guy with all the piercings had. Why did your man's elbow have to get cut off?
That was
disgusting. The nipples, what was that? Just so many
guns.
The
out
raping
of
the gun, like with the gun. Why? Just why?
Okay, a good film isn't about being realistic necessarily. It's about executing its own concept well.
But like, there's nothing to this film. It's just literally a guy's paradise of what, like, you know, they think a 16-year-old wants to see.
Yeah, okay, no, that's exactly
it. It's
yeah.
Like, I felt like a 13 or 14-year-old boy wrote this who's literally just discovered boobs and sex and, you know, is still kind of like into like violence and fighting and was like, right, what way am I going to get the most out of like writing this? Because it just made no sense.
Yeah, it's jokes you come up with your friends when you're sitting around in supervised study making each other laugh, isn't it?
Which is something like I don't think I would ever have come up with this film ever.
I don't like the fact they turned him into a Superman. Like, he gets resurrected from the fucking dead in the first film, which I love the fact he fucking dies in the first film, and that spoils that joke. No, like, I have to strike that from my headcanon. Like, and yeah, it was way too fucking gross with all like the shit, like the elbow and the sodomy with the gun and all. Like, that was too far.
I thought
now.
The elbow bit was one of the best executed. I thought that looked great.
Oh no, I thought it was too gross.
As compared to a lot of the other stuff in the film, where they didn't really have the budget to pull it off.
That's another thing. It felt cheaper than the first one. Like.
Well, here's the thing. So they filmed it differently to how they filmed the first one. They filmed it with a bunch of prosumer camcorders that they could run around with and not worry about them getting broken. So I think the film looks really cool because of that.
A bit too shaky at some
and
point.
Then,
so, like,
you know, so they're dealing with a bunch of low-res footage. So they spent a lot of time getting color graded. So they put a lot of money and effort into color grading, and I think the film looks really cool and unique because of that.
But I just struggle, like, literally 10 minutes at a time, and by the 10 minutes mark was up, I'm like, I don't know if I can keep going.
Even from the very opening scene, he's kind of half awake, his heart is pumping away, there's some Aegis smoking a fag over him. Like, what
pumps
the
ashtray into his heart.
And then it's like,
I thought that
the
opening scene was really
you're
good.
Hung like a horse.
Okay,
and then
I
they're
going to
take the willy away. Like, what? You can't take one willy away and attach it to another man. I don't understand.
Yeah, I hated that. I hated all the dumb stereotypes. There's 5 million different ethnic stereotypes in the film. It starts off with Asians fucking, you know.
Oh, that
you know,
girl
going
was...
over, they're going over about, you know, the size of the white man's penis, you know. That's
yeah, but
that's
the girl, the girl he saves, and then she, oh, that was brutal, and she starts beating the fat fella with the bike in the balls. Oh my god. I don't know how any lad could sit there and watch that and not go, oh.
Yeah, that bit was even worse than the fucking elbow I've gone red.
You just blocked it from your memory.
I didn't
want to
think about it.
Oh god, no, it's just,
redeeming quality.
It wasn't funny. It wasn't interesting. It wasn't like there wasn't any particularly great acting in it.
I think this is Jason Statham's best role.
No,
I thought he had some funny lines in
Spy. With
there was nothing funny about that film.
What about his Cockney rhyming sign? You know, where he says, "Where's my raspberry tart?"
And especially because he's not the kind of person who seems to use it a lot in the film.
He just Cockney rhyming slang all the time.
Not that
in the film.
Much. It, that felt a bit forced. The strawberry.
Also, it
thing.
Had the great soundtrack by Mike Patton from Mr. Bungle and Faith No More, and.
Oh, I like Faith No More.
Yeah, he's the Faith No More guy. He did the soundtrack.
I think I saw for this one because at least Crank One, it was awful, but we watched it together.
Yeah,
but
I think it's the kind of thing
film
that
on your own was torture. Like, there's no other word for it. I would literally watch any other film we previously, like, name one.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah.
I would watch it again.
Jesus. Well.
I honestly would.
Worse.
I didn't think Aqua Teen Hunger Force would ever be, like, fucking better than anything. Jesus.
Like, at least
Aqua Teen Hunger Force was
out and watch it in the background.
Aqua Teen Hunger Force was one of those things, though, that, like, it made no sense. Like, Crank 2 makes no sense. To me, it makes no sense. But there was, like, cute characters. So it had one redeeming quality, whereas Crank 2 has.
This isn't entertaining. Whoever thinks this is entertaining needs their head checked.
Wait, no, you can't defend Aqua Teen Hunger Force by putting down Crank 2. You have to defend Aqua Teen Hunger Force on its own terms.
We said it has one redeeming quality.
What
the characters are cute.
But the characters are kind of cute.
Okay, but I.
It's like Tara and Dr. Weird.
Isn't entertaining at all?
But it gives it 1 point above Crank 2.
Fair enough, okay.
I don't remember laughing once or smiling once at anything that happened. It was just so cheap. Even the sex, like normally sex jokes and stuff make me laugh, but that just, I was just like, really?
Yeah, the jokes
like,
are like, ooh.
She's there sitting on him like he's a fucking cowboy. Like, oh, just, no, it just, ugh.
Yeah, there's a joke every 30 seconds and more often than not, they don't land.
Like, I felt it was written by Uwe Ball or something, like with all like big dick jokes and stuff like.
And the women characters are just so terrible. I mean, they're terrible.
Yeah.
Like the girl who likes him because he saved her life and now she thinks he's her boyfriend. And then the girl who's meant to be seemingly a bit more like his type, like his the girlfriend or whatever. But she's ridiculous as well. And like he was dead for 3 months and she's already got off with Randy. Oh, I don't know. Just nothing landed for me in that movie. The best line in it was actually a line that was used in Snatch, which is another film that Jason, whatever his name is, when it was in. So there's two Snatch Easter eggs in it. One of the guys from Snatch that he worked with, Stephen Graham, is a customer where Eve is doing her stripping. And then the line where he's like, shoots the guy and it's a blank. And obviously doesn't hit. And he's like, "You lucky bastard." That's also a line from Snatch. And probably the only line that was actually good in that whole movie.
I thought just like the first film, the climax fell flat. Just because they didn't, they weren't able to pull it off.
Only because it looked like a really bad green screen. Like, that was
Do you remember?
The first one were grand apart from the green screen at the end.
Yeah, do you remember him falling out of the helicopter? Looks awful.
Yeah, that was
and
really.
And then again, he's on fire in the second one, and again, it looks awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, did he not learn from the last movie? Like, the doctor had his heart. He was ready to go. Okay, it mightn't have worked out. But I mean, he put himself on fire trying to beat up a guy with no head or with no body. Like, oh, it's just so ridiculous.
And then he threw the boat in a pool. I'm pulled there, quench yourself.
Yes, I don't understand. Like, go. Like, I kept being like, what is wrong with you? You're standing there like,
Well, if he has electric heart, could he jump into water? You know, like put the toaster in the bathtub, like.
No, his heart's not electric. It just needs electric to power it.
What do you think the premise for Crank 3 will be?
I don't think there'll be one. Please. It's been 10 years.
I'd like to see Crank 3 where Jason Statham's heart.
I don't think Crank 2 made money though.
The budget was $20 million US dollars, and they made $34 million. So they only made $14 million.
But if, I mean,
if even.
Yeah, if we're thinking about advertising, I'd say they probably lost money on it.
Listen to my concept for Prank Tree. This is good now. This time Jason Statham has to keep his heart pumping by winding a key on his back, and he has to make sure he's able to rewind it while fighting off people.
Oh, my other bit of trivia for it is the porno actors that were like in that big riot were actually porno actors.
Really? Oh yeah. Well,
and
I mean,
a porno actor that wasn't actually invited, I can't remember his name, that wasn't actually like asked to come or anything, or wasn't like cast, just arrived because he just assumed that he should be there.
Was that Ron Jeremy?
Yeah, I think it's Ron or Roy or something like
when
that.
When I saw the porn actors with signs, I was like, okay, where's the Ron Jeremy cameo? And there he was.
Yeah, but he wasn't actually asked to come. He just like arrived, apparently, according to the trivia I read.
What if, I'm trying to think of Crank 3 scenarios, what if he has to get really, really fucked up? Like he has to get high.
What if he has to smile?
He has to find every
How
narcotic.
Could he act any more strange than he does anyway? Like, I just... No, please.
I don't think you could.
Please don't make a Crank 3. Like,
I don't
please.
Think you could do it after you've gone so far with Crank 2, but I think, like, Crank 1 would
Come
have
been. Come on, first. He died in the first one, and he's basically dead now. Like,
no,
he can't come back another time. What is the post credit scene?
It's just him walking with your one, Amy Schmerz.
Is he still on fucking fire?
No, he has a normal heart. Yeah.
His eyes open, and he's still alive.
Yeah.
And is he all burnt?
Yeah.
Because she met the girlfriend Eve made such a big deal when she saw his scar. So what's she going to be like when he's all fucking melted? He's literally a melt.
Yeah, he's covered in bandages, so we don't know how bad he was.
He's fairly bad.
He's just a mummy.
Yeah, like his skin was starting to like melt.
He's not alive.
He's alive and he's a good heart.
It's just so stupid. It's just so stupid.
It's not even stupid funny. Like, I don't mind stupid films. They're so bad, they're funny. But this is just awful.
Our last film, anyway, was Star Trek. And Karen picked it.
Star Trek is my film. It's the latest rendition or reboot, whatever you want to call it, of Star Trek for the big screen. It starts off with this evil Romulan Nero getting trapped in a black hole space warp thing and coming back to the past. So in his reality, he blames Spock for the destruction of his planet. But because he's gone back in time, he's altered the timeline and has killed Jim Kirk's father, and also he grows up without a father, and essentially just a new version of Star Trek in which they go off and
it's like an alternate universe.
Go off and he goes to the academy and tries to cheat the test and eventually becomes captain and all that fun stuff.
He still makes it to captain though.
He does.
From cadet to captain, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like was first years. Officer.
That's field commission, as it got.
You just missed that part, but it did happen. The other captain with the yellow, Mike or whatever, what's his name? Pike.
Made him first officer.
He said, like, to Spock, you're basically captain, and Kirk, you're first officer.
Do you have Captain Pike down there in your trivia? For you?
No.
Oh, okay. In the pilot for Star Trek, before William Shatner signed on, it was a character called Captain Pike. And then from the rest of the series on, this character was ditched and it was Captain Kirk from then on.
That's interesting. So, what did we think of Star Trek?
I really like it.
It's a bit boring.
It's hard for me to disassociate it with the rest of the franchise. It's hard for me to think of it on its own terms.
Yeah, see, I've come in as a virgin newbie to Star Trek, so I don't have that issue, but I can see why you would have that issue if you've watched all the other things, and then, like, if it's a completely kind of different, like, is Captain Kirk a very different character in this?
Yeah.
Because of the death of his father and stuff.
Well, they're all kind of different. What they did was they took some of these characters have sort of low-key character traits in the series, and then they blew them up to, like, epic proportions. The thing about the movie is, I believe there has been a systemic decline in Star Trek since the 90s, and it's hard for me to not see this movie as a part of that.
Whereas I liked it.
Do you have any attachment, though, to, like, the next generation?
No, I have no attachment to any previous rendition.
I liked it, but I didn't love it. It was just like, it's fine to watch. It's like something I would watch with, like, the kids or something. And I know there's a sex-ish scene in it, but, like, not in bad. And she's green, so she's basically covered.
I out of all the new Star Trek that's come out in the last 10 years, I think this movie's by far the best. I liked it actually more than I was expecting to, because I didn't love it when it came out. But I think that putting 10 years worth of distance between me and it coming out has actually helped quite a bit. And there was a lot of buzz when the film came out. I mean, people were really excited for Star Trek to come back, because Star Trek had kind of died a really slow, painful death a few years earlier. And this was new, and it was exciting, and a new cast, and it was big budget and everything. And then the franchise kind of tapered off and died again, because I think the one that came out after this, Into Darkness, was egregiously poor. And then
that one's on Netflix, so.
And then the third one was fine, but it didn't have the wit and panache of this one.
Yeah,
there was a couple of funny moments and stuff in this.
And I like an awful lot of the characters in this. Like, I like like, obviously, like, Captain Kirk is Captain Kirk, and Kirk is fine, but, like, I think like, Scotty is an interesting character, and so is the Polish guy. What's his name?
Chekhov.
I'm so sad.
Simon Pegg didn't have to audition for the role of Scotty. He just got an email saying, do you want to play this?
Wow.
And he just read the script and went, yeah.
Yeah, they obviously watched this.
That was about it. Well, I love Simon Pegg in most things, to be fair. He's pretty good. Yeah, I like the Chekhov character as well. But like you said, it was kind of funny that he was like an officer in the ship, but he's only meant to be like 17. And it's like you have to go to college for like, or whatever.
Four years before
you can be that. And it's like he must be some sort of child genius or something.
Have you ever heard a Russian not being able to pronounce V?
I don't know.
I've heard Japanese people not being able to.
Well, that's Chekhov's thing, that he can't say V, he says W instead.
Oh, like the Germans as well.
Well, he says, when he's trying to say nuclear vessels, he says nuclear vessels, and he does it again in this movie, and it's supposed to be funny, but I don't think I've ever heard a Russian person do that.
Yeah, I haven't spoken to a Russian person long enough.
They did have a bit of Russian audio in there, though, in the movie. So the automatic doors is actually the sound of a Russian train toilet flushing.
What does that mean?
So do you know, like, whatever sound they use for making the automatic doors open? It's actually audio taken from a Russian train toilet flushing.
Oh, right. Weird.
Very weird.
Do you want another thing? And this is another thing that I appreciated more when there's been 10 years of distance between me and this film, and I can kind of try to appreciate it more in its own terms. I love the interior of the ship.
Oh, no.
Why not? Why don't you like it?
It looked too much like an Apple ship.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that before, but for what it is, I really like it. And especially like the engine room scene. I love the way it actually looks like an engine room. And I love the way most of the stuff is practical. Because if you think about it, in 2009, we're coming off the Star Wars prequels and stuff like that, when fucking everything is CG. And also just designed all to hell, so it's removed from all practicality and looks completely abstract. Yeah. But here you have an engine room that looks like an actual engine room, and it's brightly lit and it looks tangible and real, and I loved it.
So it grew on you.
It has grown on me. It just, yeah.
So you were it was probably too soon for you.
I'm beating a dead horse, but it just makes me sad that Star Trek isn't as good, in my opinion, as it used to be.
I think that's the way, though. Do you know, like, anything like that, like, where it's the original and then they start trying to, like...
Yeah. You've sentimental...
Yeah, you've sentimental associations with those characters and the way they were originally. And even though you know, you're not, like... Even though there's potential for you to eventually really like one again, you'll never quite feel the same about a new one as you will an older one.
Well, to be fair, I didn't see Star Trek or Star Trek Next Generation or Deep Space Nine when they came out. I would have seen them many years later.
Yeah, I know, so, but they still, when you seen them, you were probably still very young.
Well, mid-teens.
Yeah.
That's before this came out.
Your years. So, like, you'd already kind of had an attachment to the way that they were portrayed and everything.
I believe, maybe you're right, but I believe that I'm capable of being above that, of being above nostalgia and things.
Well,
like that.
No, but it has taken you 10 years.
It's taken me 10 years to
you said
what, see this film in a new light?
See this film in a new light.
Yeah.
10 years ago,
like,
you
nobody's
able to do that.
Nobody's really above nostalgia. Like, it's something that you just. Like, it's something that makes you feel good and warm and fuzzy inside, no matter who you are.
But I believe I'm capable of looking at this film and not being like, this is different to the thing I know, therefore I don't like it. That's not
no,
the reason I didn't like it.
No, not to not like it. But I'm saying, even if you watched, and if a new one came out tomorrow and it was really good, and even if you really liked it, what I'm saying is, you probably still wouldn't like it quite as much. On the exact same level as how much you like the original, because that's the one you kind of originally fell in love with.
Yes, but not for that reason. Only because I believe the writing of the old Star Trek TV shows was of a higher quality.
But let's say, like Glo said, they started from scratch and rewrote a new one that had excellent writing in it.
Yeah. You feel I still wouldn't like it as much as I liked the Next Generation.
You would still have...
You would have a different association.
A different association with the old one.
Maybe you're right. I think I'm capable of being above that, but maybe not. I don't know. I would love it if they came out with a Star Trek TV show or film that had a really great sci-fi concept in it.
Yeah, I know. That's not what I'm saying, though. What I'm saying is, like... Everyone has certain things that, like, nostalgia is just overpowers them a bit. Like, we all have things that we like purely because they remind us of a different time or a different place or whatever.
Well, okay, we're beating a dead horse. I don't think that's an issue with me, especially considering when I watched these TV shows, I was in my mid-teens and being miserable in secondary school. So it's not exactly like a time I would want to go back to.
Yeah, but it might have been a comfort to you back then.
Who knows?
I do, because I know everything.
They're telling me.
The power has gone to my head.
So, budgets?
The budget was $150 million US, and the box office, it made, sorry, $385.7 million US at the box office. So basically doubled what the budget was, but still not great, is it?
Say that one more time.
So its budget was 150 million.
Okay.
But it made 385.
They had to have made more than that.
I don't know. This is just what I got off the internet.
If
the wonderful world.
It feels like it wouldn't have made anywhere near enough money to spawn a whole trilogy of films.
That could just be the American box office gross, not worldwide though. Because like things like Star Trek get released in China.
And then things like Star Trek have a lot of merchandise to go along with them as well. Like films are actually... A lot of times now, just like a catalyst for bringing out a whole product line.
Sure, but and this is weird, but studio executives are weirdly obsessed with opening weekends and how much money they can make quickly. It's like they don't even care too much about films when they come out on DVD.
I think that's perhaps back to older days, though, when like a film would only be in, like, you know, if. You know, it wouldn't have made it to a DVD and blah, 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 and have merchandise. So I think that's probably just from old Hollywood days, no?
I don't think so.
No, Fitzy's right. That still is a big thing they all look at. But
no,
like,
but I mean, I know that they still do, but are they just being old-fashioned and looking at it like in the way that... As my marketing head on, I'm like, okay, so it mightn't have made as much money as we thought a box office, but how much money are we going to make out of merchandise of Star Trek dolls and merchandise of Star Trek outfits and merchandise of Spock's ears and all the rest of it that could be made?
Yeah, but it's like films that are going to be big merchandising deals are already going to make money at the box office. So that's almost like a secondary concern. And it's like their first concern has to be, okay, is this going to make money in our primary money-making way? Is this going to make money at the box office is the first thing they worry about. They don't worry so much about merchandising because they only sign big merchandising deals with films that are already going to make money, like Star Wars and what have you.
Oh, the Romans were shaved bald to purely just to be differentiated from the Vulcans.
I've watched so many episodes of Star Trek and I still don't know why the Romulans are Romulans and why they come from Romulus. I don't understand why there's this alien planet that corresponds to this legend that we have on Earth. I don't get it at all. They never explain that.
Well, they don't explain it in this. And I would have thought, like, they all have tattoos as well.
The legend we have on Earth is that Rome was founded by a guy called Romulus and Remus. Oh, by the way, they don't mention Remus, but Remus is the sister planet of Romulus. It seems like a fucking huge coincidence that they go into space and they're like, hey, they
never got... But hold on, could we have just decided that, you know, wait, the other countries, what that country is actually called, translated to English, often sounds very, very different. So could once the discovery of Romulus happened, it sounded something... like it, because the Romulus language isn't English. They wouldn't call it Romulus in Romula.
Okay.
Romulan is our translation.
They hear everything through a universal translator. So, maybe.
Four kids translator.
So we've just decided, oh look, there's two planets there. They're very similar. One's Romulus, one's whatever is the other one.
Okay, but when the Romulans are speaking to each other, when there aren't any humans around, they still call it Romulus.
But it's in English,
yeah,
for them.
Now they've decided that, like, you know, that's what, like, you know, is the universal name for their planet.
I think these are just things you just don't think about. Like, how come Pokemon's names are made of portmanteaus, the English language, if they existed before the English language?
And why couldn't the person who found Rome have been from Romulus?
Okay, Alex Jones, slow down.
Because that's before we made first contact. In the Star Trek canon, humans made first contact shortly after the Third World War, which I can't remember if it's already happened or if it's like 50 years.
Well, according to Star Trek, we'll have a united Ireland in 3 years, so, you know.
What's the star date thing about? Is that just like a normal
date? Yeah, it's how
date.
We tell the date.
Because he seemed shocked when the older... Spock was talking to their man when he asked for the star date. He seemed shocked that he was asking for the star date.
Yeah, because not many people know what date it is.
It's sad that but Spock
it's a normal
and,
question in my house
Chekhov
all the time. What date is today?
The OG Spock.
Yeah, but the OG Spock and also the young guy who played Chekhov in this film are both dead.
They are.
Yeah.
That's sad. I was very sad when I heard the news that Chekhov died.
What did he die of? We talked about this. Mm.
I think I blocked it out in my head. Was before the movies. I suppose you weren't as attached to the young fella.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, it was sad.
William Shatner's Bane posted to me on Twitter before. I just want to mention that because I can't get over that's actually happened more than once.
I like the character. Like, I like Chekhov. I like the fact, like, you know, he was like, you know, I can do that. I can do that.
Yeah.
There's never. In this film, there's always something exciting going on. There's always somebody. They always came up with something fun and exciting to jazz up the scene a little bit. They came up with Chekhov, you know, warping the two guys out of when they're flying through the air. When Scotty and Kirk being back on the ship,
he couldn't do that with the mother.
He lost her. He couldn't.
Yeah, I know.
It was
but
such
it just
a
sucked.
Crap that, like, you know, he was fine.
When Kirk and Scotty being back onto the ship, there's the quick little scene of Scotty being caught up in the tube.
Yeah.
When McCoy sneaks Kirk onto the ship, they do the thing where he injects him with the vaccine. Then he's
yeah, that was funny. That whole scene was funny.
It seems like when they were writing the screenplay, they were like, okay, we need a little extra something funny to, you know.
Do you know when his hands were all blown up? I was like, that's me in a flare. That's literally what my hands do look like sometimes.
That's going to become a meme on your, like, I'll try this thing.
Yeah, it will. Inspo for my next girl with the old lady bones meme, yeah. I liked it. I'd probably watch the next one, even though you said it's shit, but I'd probably give it a go.
See, I like them.
I don't think you'll like the second one, but who knows?
Well, we have very different tastes, though, so. You like Crank 2, for example.
Oh, dear.
I liked it well enough. I think it's. I thought it was a great starting off point for the franchise, and it's sad that it just kind of atrophied and didn't really go anywhere.
Is this where all Chris Pine's, like Pine Nut fans, or whatever they're called, Ken, from?
I don't know.
What else is he known for?
I don't know.
He was on Graham Norton, and it was like Benedict Cumberbatch or something, and that's what they called themselves, Cumberbitches. And then Chris Pine Nuts, and there was like a load of Asian women came to see both of them in the audience, in the Graham Norton audience, and they were like having a competition of whose fans had traveled further to see them. I can't remember who won, to be honest with you. I think it was Cumberbatch. It was Benedict Cumberbatch, like, but they were calling Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
But he was. Was he in Doctor Who? No.
No,
he was Sherlock.
He's
in Sherlock Holmes.
You know,
yeah,
he's
but
in
he's
a version of Star Trek.
You know, he's in the next one.
He's in the next one.
Yeah.
So that's why the two of them would have been in a Graham Norton interview together. It was probably when they were advertising the next film.
Oh no, Graham! Have you ever watched Graham Norton? It's like they do. All actors from all different types of movies. They weren't advertising that together at all.
Yeah, but odds are, like, it was around the same time that they would have been working together.
But, yeah, I'm just wondering where the Pine Nuts thing came out of, because I don't really know him for that much, for much else.
Well,
I don't remember him being in anything big.
Was that Chris Pine?
What?
He was in the second Princess Diaries film.
There's a second one.
There's a second Princess Diaries.
Maybe
what?
It is him. I can see him being a prince in something. But I don't think that will get pine nuts. What was our favourite film, lads? We know what our worst one was, let's just be honest. We don't even need to discuss it.
I'm actually interested to hear Fitzy's worst, because I don't think it's going to be great.
Worst, the blow up air doll. The best? I don't know. I love the beginning of Up, and I think the rest of Up is fine. Star Trek, I think, is quite good. I don't know.
But you have to pick one, right? Fucking hell.
I think I'd have to go with Star Trek. I think it was more entertaining throughout than Up. I think once they got to the plateau, I...
Plateaued.
I think the rest of Up was a fine adventure film with some, you know, nice messages and stuff in it. But I didn't think it was anywhere near as powerful as the opening. And not just the first 10 minutes, but like the first act of the film. I thought meeting the two characters meeting and, you know, him finally going up into the air was a fantastic scene and stuff like that. But once the real plot kicked in, I wasn't as interested.
Yeah.
I think I'd go with Star Trek as my best and Air Doll as my worst.
Okay.
Star Trek is my favourite. Crank 2 as the worst film ever reviewed.
Yeah, it's definitely the worst.
What's your favourite though?
My favourite is Up, but only because, like, I just have an emotional attachment to Carol.
Well, yeah.
And Ellie. And, like, I just love the message of the film, because that's just, I'm a sap and that's just me. But I did really like Star Trek. And my worst, I don't need to say.
My best is Up, and my worst is Crank 2, but I don't think it's the worst review on this. Probably top 5, maybe top 3, but yeah, it's up
okay,
there.
Okay, what is worse than this?
Into the Wild and Crazy Stupid Love.
We didn't watch Crazy Stupid Love. That's a great movie.
I always call it that. You know what I'm
about. Yeah, Crazy.
A lot like Love.
We did. The three of us watched Crazy Stupid Love
ages
before.
Ago.
But he didn't come. Connor didn't come, and Dawn are present at the time.
So
that was a good
Chris Pine was in The Princess Diaries 2, and he was also in Wonder Woman and a few other things.
When did 2 come out?
There's what, about, what about they're Mr. thinking of making a third one, I think.
Princess what about Diaries. Mr. Brooks? That was
oh, that was also awful.
That was crap.
Crank was worse.
What was the other one that was really...
Mr. Brooks was longer, though.
Raising Arizona was really crap.
Raising Arizona is
great. At least Mr. Brooks.
Raising
Helen is what he means. Yeah, it's like, what the fuck is
Look, see, they're so
Arizona.
Bad, I get them mixed up. But at least no, Mr. Brooks had...
Raising Helen had cute moments in it. Like, come on.
Oh,
it
so
had
terrible.
Redeeming moments.
No, that...
In Crank 2, all he's doing is going around raping people, having sex, beating the shit out of them. But it's not even good sex. That, sorry, that woman was not coming the way he was riding her. It just wasn't going to happen. But she was going on like it was the best sex of her life.
I just have to get it out there. Mr. Brooks gets good points. A lot of good points for having Dane Cook getting the shit kicked out of him. So I love it for that.
Right.
Oh, my leg is sore.
That's us, isn't it, for today. We'll be back with the... Last quarter of
third quarter
of 2009. Do we ever keep a promise?
Yeah, hopefully we'll be back. Start listening to us more, and then we'll be more motivated to do it. Thank you for listening. It's been fun. Bye from Gloria.
Bye from me.
Goodbye.
Bye from Karen.
Bye.
Oh, fucking thanks.